Hey everyone, you're listening to the official podcast of 4playernetwork.com. Check us out at that address for everything you need to know about our community, monthly giveaways, and nightly live streams. You can even support us on Patreon at patreon.com/4player. And last but not least, you can catch the live recordings of these podcasts every single Thursday night on our Twitch channel. We hope to see you there. Enjoy. Welcome to 4Player Podcast. This is actually, for those who have been tuning in all week, have noticed that we've been at E3 in Los Angeles all week long. We've been talking about all the stuff we've been playing and seeing all week long, but on Thursday night, which was the last night, we actually did not record a podcast in favor of getting to bed early, so we could catch a really early flight on Friday morning. So in lieu of that, we are actually recording tonight. This is at the time of this recording, it's Sunday night, June 17th, and we've been back from E3 for a couple of days now, and I'm joined here by Crispy and Chris Davis.
Hello.
And we're going to just cut. First of all, I want to just wrap up and talk about the last few things that we saw and played on the final day, which also, I'll have you note, is the only day of the entire show, the three-day conference, that was open to everybody all day long. So not just media or industry, because day one, day two, it was open to media and industry in the morning, and then around noon, it opened up to everybody else. So day three was kind of a madhouse. It was open to everyone all day long. All of the lines were super long. There was lots of lines getting capped. So naturally, we didn't maybe play or see as much on the last day, except for a few appointments and a few things we actually did manage to get in line to play. But yeah, I wanted to talk about those things, and then I want to spend a little bit of time talking about just kind of our thoughts on the show in general, because the show has gone through some changes. They're still trying to find that sweet spot, I guess, now that they've started opening the show to the public. So I just wanted to get everyone's take on the state of the show and talk about that at the end. So, and also for those watching live, because we are recording this live, I do usually record a bonus podcast on Monday nights for 4Player Plus, but I just want to let everybody know that tomorrow night, before my stream, I will not be recording a podcast, just because we've been doing a lot of podcasting over the past week. So tomorrow will be a pure game stream with myself, so this will kind of serve as the 4Player Plus episode for the week. And with that said, what the hell did we see and play on Sunday or on Thursday? Anybody want to start? I kind of want to. So the one big game that I know we all saw and played, and Chris Davis saw this the other day. He talked about it, I think, on day three or four or something. I don't know. Was Metro, but Crispy and I finally got a chance to sit down and play Metro at the end of the day. We had that same appointment on Thursday to play that. So I kind of want to talk about that, revisit it now that we've all three played it, but I want to save that for last. Who wants to start? Crispy, what did you see on Thursday, if anything?
Not a whole lot, actually.
Yeah.
Thursday was kind of rough. I did see... I went with you to see Metro Exodus at the end of the day.
Yes.
And that took up a pretty big chunk of time. We also saw that presentation for The Surge 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's that was kind of the first appointment we had of the day. That was also... a Focus Home Entertainment game. We had talked about Greedfall, I think, on day one. This is another game from that publisher. And as far as I know, none of us here have any history with The Surge, right? No one here has played the original?
No.
No, yeah. I never got around to it.
Yeah, and honestly, it's one of those things where it's one of those games that often gets, I think, draws a lot of comparisons to a Souls game, but kind of in a sci-fi setting, which naturally sounds kind of cool. But I think the first game kind of lacked a certain amount of polish and maybe fell short in other areas. I know people like I think Jaeger said he hates that game with a passion. So I don't really know what to think of the first game. But we had an appointment to go check out The Surge 2. And I don't know about you, Christy. I kind of walked away pretty interested in it. I sadly I don't really have anything to compare it to, so I don't know how much it's changed since
right,
the first one.
Right.
Well, did they put a bunch of emphasis on artificial limb dismemberment?
Yes.
Yes.
See, I didn't even know that was an
that
element.
That was the focus of the first game.
Okay. So I guess
that was still like the huge looting mechanic here too. Was like targeting body parts on enemies, hacking it off, and then you get like a blueprint to build that piece of equipment later.
Yeah, which I think seemed pretty cool. The combat seemed pretty visceral. And honestly, when he first started the presentation, there was a couple things that kind of struck me. One was that he talked about the kind of success of the original game, and that this game is they released that game like a year ago.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so you're telling
it was
me you
May
built
15th
yeah.
last year.
So I was like, so you're telling me you built a sequel to this game in a year?
Yeah.
So which that kind of initially kind of put me on edge. Like, I don't know how much you can actually accomplish or evolve in a year on a game. So,
yeah.
But again, I don't really have anything to compare it to, so I don't know how polished or unpolished the first game was. But then, yeah, he started talking about the dismemberment thing, and he started by saying something about this, about the game taking place in like a very urban, like science fiction setting. But then the demo that they played for is set up and takes place in this like.
In a park.
In this futuristic park. I guess it's like a, yeah. it's like a fake park that was created to simulate nature in this like dystopian future where like everything is like super urban and there's not a lot of access to like
chrome.
There's not a lot of access to natural beauty and that kind of thing, which I thought was a kind of cool concept. But like, so yeah, the demo was way greener than I was expecting going into it. But
yeah, I mean, it was like. It was an interesting demo. I don't feel like it necessarily highlighted a lot of the stuff that they were saying it did.
Yeah.
Because, like, their big takeaway, like, the one thing that they really wanted us to understand about this game was that it was a lot bigger and more open than the last game, which I guess takes place entirely within, like, one facility, like a factory or something
like
that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you're just, like, kind of moving through levels of a factory. But this one, they're like, oh, no, we built, like, this whole world, and we really liked it. And, I mean, they name-dropped... They didn't ever specifically name-drop Dark Souls, but they were talking a lot about features of Dark Souls world design that, like, you can kind of tell that that's like what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah.
They were really.
I mean, this
into...
is the same developer that made Lords of the Fallen, so.
Yeah, I mean, they were really into like the idea of like interconnected paths and backtracking shortcuts and this and that and what, you know, all that kind of stuff, and they were, you know, really adamant that they wanted exploration and like secret areas to kind of be a thing now.
Yeah.
But then they didn't really show any.
Yeah,
they
demo...
showed this like linear park level.
Yeah,
like
which was kind of a bummer. It same thing can kind of be said of what we saw of Sekiro, where they talked about kept referencing Dark Souls 1 world design, how everything's interconnected, but what they showed us was very linear. So
it was pretty. Yeah,
but
I mean, it was more like I could see it being kind of like a, and I mean, if you to be fair to the Surge 2 and everything, like if you just take like a you know, 30-minute, 20-minute vertical slice out of Dark Souls, it can kind of look like that too. You know? But they didn't really do much in the way of like, hey, here's a secret area over here, or like, hey, we unlocked a shortcut to this other area that you've already seen, you know? But like the particular mission was all about going around to different parts of the city to activate these towers that project a energy field that drives some kind of monster away.
Yeah.
So this was like they just activated one of them and they were going to do the second one, and that was the entire mission that they showed. And then there was a lot of emphasis on combat AI, like how different enemies will like try to set up ambushes for you and employ different tactics if they're alone than if they're in a group, and how, you know, you targeting one enemy will make the other enemies react in a different way, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which looked really cool, but you know that's going to be another thing where it's like the implication is neat, but is it really going to matter? You know, we'll have to wait and see, yeah, I guess, until we see the full game.
It's just, it's one of those things that's going to be hard to gauge based off what they showed us.
I will say, like, the whole pastiche of, like, the techno armor and, like, the future-y weapons, that these ones were a little more kind of out of the box than just, like, a giant, you know, metal axe. It was, like, some kind of transforming weapon that could do a couple different things. That was pretty neat. That stuff looks cool. So, like, if like, the core of the game, if, like, the sort of framework that is driving the action is interesting and cool, I mean, this could be a really fun game to check out. But
yeah,
you know, I just know that the reputation of the first one's not so stellar.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. They did also show the character creation.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess, was something that wasn't in the first game, so this game is also one of the is going to differentiate itself in that way too. And it looked like a pretty robust character creation system, which was cool. And I also liked that, like, some of the setup as far as, like, apparently you're doing, like, you're like a mercenary, I guess, who's doing these missions, because like, that's just kind of how this world works. Everybody's kind of taking care of themselves. It's a lot. It's kind of like how they talked about Cyberpunk, where everyone's kind of, you know, a mercenary and does everything, is like a mercenary for hire, and they do everything for money.
Yeah.
And they showed, like, some of the enemies that they faced were actually other mercenaries who were trying to do the same job you were. So they were trying to actively stop you from accomplishing the mission because they want to take that bounty. And I thought that was kind of cool. But it was also kind of hard to gauge because they didn't show, like, anything about, like, the story or a presentation or how that aspect of the game. And it works, which is kind of a red flag for me, because I feel like the gameplay that they showed looked really cool. And the combat looked visceral and fun, but, like, if the story just is, and the characters, like, if the voice acting's terrible and the cutscene animations are awful and the story, overarching story, just kind of sucks, like, it could kind of just bring the whole experience down, even if, like, the core mechanic is cool.
How could you have a shitty story about a place named Jericho City?
Oh my god, that... I forgot about that. Damn it. I forgot about that.
Another... I made sure to write that down.
I saw you because you were sitting, like, right behind me, and the moment they said Jericho City, I kind of turned and looked at Crispy, and he was like, I could, like, see his eyes roll and then, like, look down at his notepad and start writing it down. I was like, well, that's coming up later.
Jericho City.
Yeah, it's a weird name. But otherwise, I do think the game looks pretty cool, and I'm gonna keep my eye on it for sure. And I honestly feel like I don't think I need to go back and experience the Surge 1. I feel like no matter what they do, Surge 2 is probably going to be the better experience. It's kind of hard to gauge, but, you know, that's usually how these things work in games, just purely because from one, like, game, like, sequels tend to build on mechanics, and mechanics almost always improve, for the most part, going from one to, from the original to the sequel. So I might just wait and see how this one turns out and not bother with the original Surge.
Who's got the time?
Yeah, no shit. Chris Davis?
Yep.
Do you have anything on your list of stuff that you saw on the last day that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I didn't even get to run through my stuff from the previous day that I played.
Oh, I forgot. You had some stuff you didn't get to mention.
So let me mention these three real quick. Just get them out of the way. I did an appointment with Calypso Entertainment, the guys who... publish a number of smaller titles, including Tropical 6. I got a new presentation of Tropical 6. It looks good. They're focusing on some infrastructure improvements in the game to make NPC movement and resources flow a lot better on the map. So instead of having to make a road that goes way the fuck around a mountain just to get somewhere, now you can make fucking tunnels. And you can establish, like, bus routes and shit like that to get your citizens to go where you need to do what you need. It's more Tropico. It looks fun. You can steal fucking monuments in the game, like the fucking Arc de Triomphe.
I have no idea remind me what kind of game Tropico is. I know you probably told me this a million times.
Tropico is a city-building Banana Republic simulator.
Banana Republic?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, like...
You are El Presidente of a island nation in the middle of the Cold War, and you're the dictator of your people.
Oh, it's a dictator simulator.
You're basically Hugo Chavez.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Cool. And you've been a fan of the series for a while, so.
Yeah, it's always had a really good sense of humor.
Did Crispy just say what I think he just said?
What did you say, sir?
I didn't say anything. What were you saying?
Okay.
I think it's great the way we record these two, because like sometimes Crispy will have this like cynical laugh, and then the Discord will detect it and then just cut back to Crispy and he's just giggling to himself, and then it cuts back to Chris Davis and he's like, what's going on? It's pretty great. Sorry. Continue.
But yeah, it's a fun series to play if you want to try out like a not that difficult city builder thing with a good sense of humor. This is a great start.
All right, cool. So, what else was Calypso showing?
They were showing Project High Rise Architect Edition. This is basically Sim Tower, made by some guys that are real big fans of Sim Tower. It actually came out on Steam a couple years ago, but this is the console port.
Oh. Okay.
And really, all that I need to say is that it's motherfucking Sim Tower. You're building a skyscraper, and you've got quests and tenants and things to do, and you just manage a fucking building.
All right, sounds great.
Yeah, and it's good. It looks pretty good.
If you're a fan of towers.
I mean, yeah, Sim Tower is like one of those classic titles that we're never going to see a sequel to, but you know, people ought to give it a try if they like classics or Sim titles.
Fair enough.
And then the last one they showed me was Shadows Awakening.
God, that's a generic ass title.
That is a generic ass fuck title.
That is so generic.
I believe this is from a Polish team. I didn't catch the name of the team. I'm sorry. But it's a Diablo-like. The catch is you play as this demon who encounters a number of human characters from another realm. And it's basically like the world-switching mechanic from Guacamelee. You know, the light world and the dark world.
Yes.
Just take that and put that in a Diablo experience.
Hey, real quick, what was the name of the game again? Shadow what?
Shadows Awakening.
Shadows Awakening, Jesus Christ. Sorry, I'm googling this. I can't believe I'm typing Shadows Awakening into Google. I just wanted to look at some screenshots.
Yeah, it's an isometric RPG. To traverse the map, you're usually playing as a human character that's bonded with the demon.
It actually looks kind of nice.
It's not bad looking, actually. If you encounter enemies from another plane of existence that are doing you harm, you switch over to the demon in his realm, which is a reflection of your reality, and you fight those monsters, and you also use that to traverse the map. Say, if a bridge is out, but the bridge exists in the other realm, you can use that to cross.
Gotcha.
It's really just a Diablo-like looter button-clicker kind of game.
Interesting. Interesting.
It's not bad. It's just it's not my cup of tea.
Gotcha. So. It's also just I feel like they would probably draw on a lot more. there'd be a lot more attention being paid to that game if they had maybe given it a different title. Anyways, but yeah, so that was everything you saw and were those all playable or were they just
they were all playable and presented for me. I didn't put my hands on them, but like I was talking to the developers and asking questions and all nine yards. So
gotcha. Cool. Was there anything else you didn't get to cover on Wednesday?
I guess it was not Wednesday. That I can remember at the moment. I think we got everything else.
Okay, so what about Crispy? Crispy,
mm-hmm.
Talk to mm-hmm. me. Talk to me, Crispy. Did you see anything else on Thursday?
I also played two different demos for Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Why did you do that?
Because I was really interested in trying them out.
Yeah,
that's the excuse.
I feel like you're wearing the evidence of the contrary on your face right now.
Oh, what, these? Yeah. No.
Crispy, I specifically I played one
to get the eye patch, but then I played the other one because I was really interested and wanted to try the Majima demo, and because my hat needed an eye patch.
But then you got a third eye patch.
Yeah, that one I just kind of took. Well, what happened was they were doing the system where they give you a ticket after you play, and then you take it to a counter and they give you the eye patch. The guy who gave me the second ticket accidentally gave me two tickets, and I did not say anything.
You did not hesitate to take advantage of the situation?
I just took it.
That's fantastic. Where is that third eye patch?
It's still sealed up. It's in my backpack.
Gotcha.
Keeping it fresh.
What did you think of Yakuza Kiwami 2?
Oh, it was really good.
This is a remake of 2, right?
Yeah. So it's a remake of 2, which I've never played, so I don't really know how to compare it to that. But I will say that it looked really good, like on par with Yakuza 0, almost.
Yeah.
Well, it's using the same engine that's used for 6, so...
Yeah.
So I'm going to be honest. Everything since 0 has kind of looked like... Not saying this is a bad thing. They're good looking games, but like they all kind of like if you were to show me a screenshot of any Yakuza, like on PS4,
yeah,
I don't think I'd be able to tell you which one is from which game.
I mean, the thing about the Kiwami 2 demo that I was watching was that not only did it have the same engine and basically everything else was the same as 6 and whatever, it had the same exact UI setup. Like, yeah. The same fonts, the same prompts, the way characters would talk on screen. Like, it was 100% the fucking same.
Yeah, I mean, that would explain how they're... I mean, you do realize how quickly they're cranking these things out. You remember what Brad said? It was like something about, like, there's been 17... Was it 17 Yakuza games released since the original Assassin's Creed game?
I can believe it.
Or am I getting these things mixed up? There's been...
No, I think you got... We were talking about there being a large number of Assassin's Creed games being released between the dates of the announcement of Kingdom Hearts 3 and...
Oh, that's right. So I'm getting my comparisons here mixed up.
Like, the entire Assassin's Creed series fits between those two dates.
But there still has been a lot.
There's a bunch of Yakuza games. Brad did have some statistic about that. I don't remember what it was, and I don't feel comfortable speculating.
Fair enough.
Wish he was here to kind of guide us through this conversation, because I don't know much about the series beyond 0, which I haven't finished yet. But this game was very reminiscent of what I had experienced in Yakuza 0.
Yeah. I was watching you play the demo.
Same kind of combat.
Mm-hmm. I was watching you play the first demo for a while. I had to go catch an appointment, and then I look over, and I see that they start playing this like elaborate cutscene. I was like, oh man, it's leading to a boss. I have like 5 minutes to get to this appointment.
Oh, that was a really badass cutscene.
Yeah, it was a great looking cutscene, like a cool scenario. And I was like, well, this is about to be a boss fight, so I had to leave. And then you came over later, and you're like, yeah, that was just that. You watched this like 5 or 6 minute long cutscene, and then the demo ends.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pretty long involved cutscenes in Yakuza normally. Anyway, I'm pretty sure. And this was no exception.
Statement.
Yeah, and this one was no exception. It was a really awesome scene at the Grand with Kiryu, and it looked like it was about to launch into this really fucking awesome boss fight, and then it didn't. It just ended, which kind of sucked. But the game was pretty cool. I mean, I got to experience a little bit of the open world and the brawling mechanics, which was pretty much exactly the same as what it was in 0. I didn't really get to do any like side mission stuff. I went into a Club Sega and like messed around with the claw machines for a little bit, but that was about it. I got to see like the restaurants. So it looks like, because I guess apparently this wasn't part of the original, but it looks like they did. They carried over that idea from Yakuza 6, where eating different foods like gives you stat boosts and like do different things for you.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat.
Didn't you go into a ramen shop?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Delicious.
Yeah, and then I just kind of did a couple story fights, and then the demo ended, and then I went back and played the Goro Majima one, which was also really cool. Had a few more fights, but and a few more kind of long story laden cutscenes. I think the story content is kind of what has been carrying me through 0, like wanting to follow these characters through this like twisting tale of crime drama.
Yeah.
And it looks like 2 has that same kind of meat on its bones as well. I didn't get to see a lot of the like side quest content, which is the stuff that like really sticks out in Yakuza.
Yeah.
That's where they really just kind of
bread and butter, man. Bread and butter.
Let their minds wander. But I didn't really get to see a whole lot of that, but I would like to see more. But yeah, I mean, it got me really excited to keep going with the series. So I kind of want to get through 0 and then maybe check out.
How far are you in 0? You can't be that much. I mean, I remember you've been.
Yeah, I think I've got like 5 chapters left.
Gotcha. Yeah. Push through, man. Finish that. I'm sure that'd be good. I will eventually get to that series one day. I promise.
It's pretty good, man.
Yeah, I know. Anything else from aside from Metro, which we'll talk about in a second?
Actually, that is with including Metro. That was my entire day 3.
Yeah, that's like I said, man. Day 3 was brutal, and that's actually kind of the inspiration for why I wanted to talk a little bit about like the state of the show, is because it wasn't until that last day that I realized just how kind of fucked up it is. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Chris Davis, did you have anything else from day 3 that you wanted to bring up?
Well, I thought we could talk a little bit about Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Sure.
That game was very Valkyria Chronicles.
Yeah. So wait, did y'all both play that? Okay, I know, Crispy, you played it before.
From I did. Day I just 2. Played the demo. They only let me play the first, like, the tutorial mission that, like, teaches you how to move characters and fire.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was, like, nothing to it. And that was incredibly Valkyria Chronicles. But I didn't get to actually play anything with any real substance to it like Chris did.
Yeah, I basically, when it was my turn to play it in line at the Sega booth, I asked for the second level, and they actually had a save dedicated to it, so...
Oh, nice.
That's what I got to play. Again, it's the same fucking gameplay, feels like the same fucking UI, character movement, the whole nine yards.
This really does feel like...
The one new thing I will say that they added that I kind of like is they've added a character that's like a dedicated mortar.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to launch this indirect shot like a mortar shell and hit enemy positions that are above you that you otherwise couldn't really get a good shot on with any other character.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was reading about that, and apparently that character class was born out of a glitch that they ran into during development of the first game.
Really?
They had a bug where... I don't remember exactly what it was. I think it had to do with the tank, the Edelweiss. There was a particular weapon. It was supposed to be like the anti-armor shell, but later on in the game, it would hit a bug where it would start launching it in an arc, like a mortar. And it launched it like farther than it was supposed to go. So it kind of like changed what you could do with it gameplay-wise. And they were having a lot of fun like messing around with it in, you know, when they were beta testing the game. And they wanted to make it its own individual class, but you know, the development on the first game was pushed too far at that point for them to actually do that. So they kind of just been sitting on this idea. And now that Valkyria Chronicles 4 is going back to like those old, like wide open kind of Valkyria Chronicle 1 maps and gameplay, they decided to go ahead and make this class.
Yeah, at that point in Valkyria Chronicles 1 development, it would have required them to like rebalance the whole game. At that point, so it's cool that stuff like that finds its way back into a new game, even if it is three games later.
Was definitely crucial for that second mission because it starts out at a castle, and there's a number of machine gun turrets on guarding the approach across a bridge, and you have to use that character in order to wipe out whoever's using the turret. So.
Cool.
Yeah, it was classic Valkyria Chronicles. Really good.
Did the second mission you saw have any snow in it?
No.
Okay. Still no snow. Noted.
I feel like snow is something that comes in probably after the first act of the game.
Yeah, I'm just kind of surprised because that was kind of like the one, visually anyways, that was kind of like the one like differentiating feature for this game, like visually. So I kind of figured they were going to push that, because that would definitely make certain fights feel different, especially if you're dealing with like being able to not being able to see far enough out in front of you and stuff, and having to react much quicker when things come into view. Like that kind of stuff has a lot of potential, I think, but, and it's the stuff I'm most curious about. But it seems like everything they've kind of been demoing so far has been pretty standard Valkyria Chronicles as far as setting and battle expectations go. So, but either it doesn't really matter, because that's still great. Valkyria Chronicles 1 combat and everything is still fantastic.
Yeah, and it still has that same like sketchbook art style filter on it, like the character design and the prop design has that same kind of really interesting style. I'm fucking excited about this game. I mean, we gave it one of our best in show.
Yeah, absolutely, we did.
Yeah.
Can't
fucking wait, man.
Can't fucking wait.
I think it's this year too.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is absolutely. And I confirmed. I couldn't remember what platform, because I had pre-ordered it. I couldn't remember what platform. Totally going Switch. I don't give a shit. Fuck it. I'm gonna play that. I'm gonna play that on Switch. I can't wait. It's funny because like they're finally bringing Valkyria Chronicles back to like proper consoles, and I'm gonna pick it up on a console that, but I'm gonna end up playing a lot of it in handheld mode. I don't know. So, because they designed Valkyria Chronicles 2 and 3 so much for handheld platforms, and now they're going back to consoles, and fuck it, I'm still gonna play it on a handheld. I don't give a shit. What else?
And while we were in line, I also got to try out the demo for the Fist of the North Star game that's being nobody the Yakuza team.
I know. Crispy talked about that the other day as well. Man, we spent a lot of time in the Sega booth, strangely enough, this year. And it's all because of the damn swag you guys are wearing on your heads.
I have no idea why.
It's fine. It's a fine hat, sir.
Oh, my God. You guys,
wonderful hat.
You guys suck. Okay, I played a little bit of Jurassic World Evolution. I went to the booth, that big fancy booth they had. It's so weird that they spent so much money on that booth. I'm not even shitting you. Like it had a huge theater inside of it. It had the giant Jurassic Park gate out in front that you had to walk through. It had a Velociraptor. You all saw the picture. It had a Velociraptor out front with all those foliage. They had the fucking Jurassic Park Jeep out there.
Oh, there was so much foliage.
Oh my God.
Yes. They yelled at me for trying to drive the Jeep away.
They did. And then after all of that, like the game was out on the day of the of E3. So yeah. Like it's funny they spent so much money doing a booth for a game that was currently in stores. Very strange. Yeah. But I went in there. It was like a 10-minute presentation with this guy who was trying to be funny, who was pretending like he was actually running a park and like he wanted all of us to help make it safe again and all this stuff. And it was, you know, came off a little as trying a little too hard. But then we got released to play a very brief demo, which, by the way, did not demo anything that I was kind of hoping to learn more about, which was the actual park building aspects of it. The demo came pre-built with, or came with a park that was pre-built, and they wanted, essentially what they wanted the players to do was release one of the dinosaurs into the park and then react to, like, respond to it, like handle the emergency response team.
Yep.
Which I thought was kind of a strange way to demo a game like this.
I mean, how do you really demo a city builder in less than 15 minutes?
I don't know. It makes me wonder why they even bothered.
It's because it's got fucking Jurassic Park in it. So much money attached to it.
I think they just wanted an excuse to make a cool booth. But it was weird because they gave us, they were like, we're going to give players an option between three dinosaurs, and we want you to release one of them into the park. There's a T-Rex, a Brachiosaurus, and a Triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
But most people pick the T-Rex. And I was like, well, yeah, no shit. Like, at first I was like, you know what, fuck it, I'm not going to do that. And I opened the gate to the paddock that had the Brachiosaurus, and those things move so damn slow. I was like, that's not gonna it started to like slowly turn towards the gate that leads out to the like the public area for the park, and but I was like, it's gotta walk for like 5 minutes before it even gets to the gate. No one's gonna be panicking. This is stupid. So I released the T-Rex. And I was in this position where, like, one, I don't play these kinds of games very often, so it took me a few minutes to kind of grasp how everything is controlled, and I couldn't, at first I couldn't quite figure out where the paddock was that had the T-Rex in it, and I finally figured that out. I let him out, and he goes charging out of the thing. He sees the gates open. There's all these people walking through the park by the visitor center. It starts charging for that gate, and then as soon as it crosses through the threshold of the gate and there's people starting to scream, it goes, "Thanks for playing." Demo ends, and I had to stop. So
we're just too slow.
So sadly, there's not a whole lot I can report here. I do think it's a cool game. It's a cool approach to take to a Jurassic Park game, I suppose. I really wanted to toy around with like actually creating, designing the park and figuring out like where the paddocks go. I mean, you've played like you said 15 hours of this game so far, Chris Davis. Like,
yeah,
you do that, right? You do lay the park out how you want it, right?
So the way it's structured is that
Chris Davis, you're about to let me down, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm not. Just let me preface this. The way the game is structured is that you're playing on the five deaths, okay? The islands.
The islands.
And
for you deep lore nerds out there,
each island actually has the remnants or setup of an initial park, and you're building it up from there. Like the one I was playing, night.
But do you have full control over where the enclosures go versus like where okay, cool.
Yeah, you can build them however you please. I mean, you place the fences, you place the cloning facility, the gates, the feeding facilities, the way visitors will look at the dinosaurs. I mean, you place everything.
Yeah, no, I kind of got a glimpse of that stuff, and I thought it was cool because you can actually send the people through the park on like the gyrospheres that you saw in Jurassic World and the jeeps and stuff. You can design the different kind of like viewing areas where people like go. They have the stadium seating and like the glass behind the glass looking out into the enclosures. That stuff seems pretty cool, and it all seems it's a pretty game, and it has like. I don't know, it has Jeff Goldblum doing some pretty, you know, succulent Ian Malcolm voiceover.
Not to mention, they actually got Bryce Dallas Howard and B.D. Wong to reprise their characters.
What about Chris Pratt?
They didn't have Chris Pratt money.
Why do they
have Chris Pratt money?
They have Jeff Goldblum money. Well, I guess Jeff Goldblum's not.
Jeff Goldblum, you throw $20 at him, he'll say something.
I guess Jeff Goldblum's not Chris Pratt. any stretch of the imagination. I don't know. It seems interesting. I kind of want to play it, but I don't know. I'm going to kind of wait and see where you fall on it, Chris Davis. You seem to be balls deep in this game so far, so
I'm enjoying it. Every island presents an interesting scenario. Like there'll be storms that'll hit an island every now and then that you have to prepare for. There will be scenarios where a park is already bankrupt and you have to, like, you start with no money at all and deeply in debt and you have to come out of that. But you also have the sandbox thing. You can actually, after you play the first island, you can go on Isla Nublar and build a whole Jurassic World however you damn well please.
That's pretty cool. I like the sound of that. They also talked briefly about the possibility of having to deal with sabotage.
That does happen.
From employees and stuff, which that's
cool.
From
employees and corporate sabotage from somebody else.
And by the way, you did mention Jeff Goldblum will say anything for you if you, you know, give him $20, whatever. But, like, his voiceover in this game does not seem, like, minor. Like, even in the short demo I played, he talked a lot. So, I don't know if it does it feel that way throughout the entirety of the experience?
Oh, yeah. No, okay. He's always saying something to you. He's always commenting on an action you've done or a dinosaur you've cloned. And it's always some kind of admonishment or backhanded compliment as to your abilities as a park manager.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. See, that's what I would expect. That's what I want. So, yeah, maybe I'll play this at some point.
So the thing I was talking about this game earlier that I read, and I'm wondering if you maybe noticed this, Chris, or had any thoughts on it, but apparently a big area of like kind of shortcoming with this game is how shallow the like guest system is.
Like, yeah, you're it's not like a like Roller Coaster Tycoon or I think even from Planet Coaster, to where you can look at a guest's like preferences and what they want to do and what they like and dislike about your park. None of that's factored into the game. It's just you building the park and basically managing a couple map overlays and statistic numbers to know what how can you upgrade your park in what areas in what way that best gets more people keep
it's more of, it's more of a park. It's a general system, right, where it's just like all that really matters is you're pulling
it's
in
like,
more people.
It well it's like it'll tell you like you can have a like you'll have like a satisfaction rating, like you'll just have this kind of like oblique satisfaction rating, but like it doesn't really tell you why guests feel the way like it doesn't tell you why they're dissatisfied. You kind of just have to chase after it. And you can't like look at the guests themselves in any way to get a sense of like what they like. Yeah. Like you don't have different types of guests. Like you don't have like thrill seekers or like, you know, family vacation. Like there's no personality to the people coming into your park. So there's no way to like cater experiences to them. So there's no way to really figure out why you just
you can't
have
create
this,
like a theme park. You're just making a Jurassic World park.
Right. And like that the, like the on-screen representation of the guests doesn't really reflect like the number of like how many guests you're supposed to be having at the park at any one time. Like you could have, you know, tens of thousands of people in your park and it doesn't really like you don't look at your park and go like, oh my God, it's bustling. Like I've got all these people and it's like a lively music. It's just like you see people, like a couple people walking on the paths here and there and they just seem to be just kind of aimlessly floating about.
Floating through your park.
Yeah, so I mean, it seems like the game focuses, just based on what I've read, it focuses more on like the dinosaurs and building facilities and like taking care of the sciencey stuff, and less on like any actual theme park management.
Yeah, you're not really doing that much micromanaging in the game.
Yeah, so it's like all Jurassic and no park.
the way you're gauging how well you're doing is number one your star rating based on how your dinosaurs are doing and how you're treating your guests with like retail space and food and and hotels and things like that, and number two just how much money you're making per minute. The more money you're making, the more likely your guests are much happier.
Gotcha.
I guess.
Cool. Well, perhaps you'll see that game pop up on a future podcast where we can roll footage and stuff and talk about it more in depth. But that was the last game I got to actually play on day three, with the exception of the last one I mentioned earlier. Is there anything else we want to talk about, or should we talk about Metro?
I saw Dying Light 2.
Oh,
same
yeah.
Same time y'all were doing Metro.
What did you think of Dying Light 2?
Visually it looks good. The human interaction seems okay. I really wish they would have focused more on the infected than they did.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the you mean you wish they had talked about it more, right?
Of showing like zombies for like, you know, 2 minutes at the beginning of the demo just to show like a hive.
Yeah.
Like give us more about the dynamics of what this world is like at night.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, in a world that's entirely focused on verticality.
I do have a feeling that as we approach, I don't know when we're going to see this game next, maybe Gamescom or something, but I have a feeling next time we see it, it's going to be focused entirely on a nighttime demo, and it's going to be more focused. Because very clearly they wanted to establish the difference. Like, they want this, the focus of this entire E3 for them was about how the world can change based on your actions and your decisions and whatnot.
They were pitching it, because they had a Q&A session at the end, and people were asking about the scope of the choices and everything. And they basically said that most of the major decisions in the game are pretty binary, but that there's also minor factions that in the game that you can help out and build up to become more than they are at the start.
Yeah, but also, and this is kind of just, I don't know how many decisions they're going to have throughout the game, but if they're, say there's like over the course of the game, there's probably like a total of like, let's just say 10 decisions, like big decisions you have to make. And even if they are binary, making one decision on one question also, or on one decision affects the world in a certain way, which means that when you make the next decision, it's going to affect it in a certain way as well, but also taking into account the decisions. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to kind of build on each other, right? Like, they would kind of have to, especially if your decisions are having impacts on the entire world. Every decision you make kind of has to stack on top of each other, which could lead to some, hopefully lead to some really noticeable differences between playthroughs. But their focus on at this E3 was almost solely on showing how the world can change based on your decisions. And as far as we know, the zombies don't really play a role in that element of the game. So it's almost like they showed us the hive, and they showed us the differences in the zombies that I had talked about the other night, just because they kind of have to. They have to, because it's a zombie game, first and foremost. Yeah. But I have a feeling, now that they've gotten that big reveal out of the way about the world being kind of malleable and changing in these hopefully grand ways, that the next time we see the game, they can focus more heavily on, like you said, like how does that nighttime gameplay, that horrifying nighttime gameplay, how does that translate to a more vertical world? Yeah. That could be really exciting. I liked all the traversal stuff I saw and everything. So I don't know. I have faith, but I'm guessing we'll probably see a lot more of that at like Gamescom or something.
Yeah, I think they just focused way too much on the parkour aspect of the game in the demo. I mean, they showed the entirety of the main character climbing a water tower.
Yeah, but
and you didn't need to see all that.
Well, I think. I guess it kind of depends on who you ask. I really wanted to see that because they were talking so heavily about how you have to make decisions when you're doing these parkour or traversal sequences, and how they've tried to add they've tried to add stakes and like pressure to those scenarios, which I think is pretty important in a game like this. But that maybe they spent a little too much time on it. I don't know. But what did you think of the demo overall? Are you excited for the game? Or,
I mean, I'm looking forward to the game. I mean, it's fucking Dying Light. You know, that was a fucking great game. And maybe I'll pick up the following, because I asked one of the first questions. I was like, so are you playing the same guy as the main character in the first game? And they were like, no, you probably didn't play the following then, didn't you? I was like,
oh, yeah. I know what he's talking about.
So I guess I need to find out. I'm looking forward to it. They need to show more.
Cool.
Binary choices and slightly improved parkour and sell me on it.
Fair enough. I think the parkour they did show was pretty, like there was a lot of new maneuvers and stuff they were showing about the parkour that got me excited. So I don't know, but you know, I was pretty, you know, everybody knows I was pretty sold on it already, but we'll see more of it probably at Gamescom, like I said. So, when is the PlayStation Experience?
That PlayStation Experience is always in December.
Okay, well we'll see it probably at one of those two shows. And Crispy, are we maybe going to hear from you and Brad on the podcast this week about Dying Light?
Yeah, I would imagine so. We played a bunch of the co-op yesterday, and I'm planning on playing more before Thursday. So
cool. Yeah. Well, I look forward to that. So now,
not now. I've got one more game that I played.
You son of a bitch, Chris Davis.
This is the last game I played at E3. Calm down.
Do you want us to talk about this game that you love so much or not?
I'm just kidding.
What's the game?
It's GTFO.
Oh god damn it. Okay, what? This is
GTFO. It's from Ten Chambers Collective. They are a collection of ex Overkill devs, including the original designer for Payday 2. It's just them doing a new co-op Left 4 Dead-esque focused sci-fi horror game thing.
Crispy, did you figure out which game this was? Because the other day you were like, which game is that?
No.
You should look up screenshots of it. It looks like... I remember when they first announced this, and my first reaction was, is this an Aliens game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I know this.
So basically, you are the prisoner on a interplanetary penal colony.
Sounds like Aliens.
There is a unknown being that calls itself the Warden that sends you down deep into some tunnels to retrieve some MacGuffins.
Some MacGuffins.
yeah, plot devices, basically.
I know what a MacGuffin is.
Okay, just making certain. Just making certain. And you and up to three other friends have to survive down there, find the object, and escape alive.
You mean, and GTFO.
And yeah, get the fuck out, basically.
Yes, thank you.
Of course, when I played the demo with the devs, we didn't get near that fucking point. I don't know how far along this game is, but it doesn't seem like it's been in development for more than a year.
So it's rough.
It's a little rough. The combat, it does have a little bit of that snappiness of like the Overkill experience of, you know, headshots and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But the enemy design and the structure of the world doesn't feel as tactical as that game.
Okay.
So basically what will happen, and I sat down with the dev, and he was like, you know what, past 2 days we've been demoing basically the first four levels of the game, fuck it, we're going to take you down to level 4D, which is basically like level 15 or 16 in the game.
So they gave you a little they gave you a little exclusive.
No, they were just like, fuck it, we've got all these levels pretty much done. We just want to try something else because we were getting bored.
Okay.
It really is like a custom create a class kind of thing where you have these set characters, you choose a primary, a secondary, a special tool, a melee weapon, and a secondary item, I think. And you're dropped down into these tunnels in this almost psychedelic-esque like drop sequence. It was actually genuinely creepy. And let's be honest here. We only got through about three rooms of this level before we died each time.
Is it because it was difficult?
It's difficult as fuck.
Not even the devs could get through.
Not even the devs with like two or three noobs on their team could really get through it. Basically, the enemy design in this game, they're like humanoid-esque monsters. The main fodder, they kind of look like crab walking people, except they've got like protruding assholes for faces.
I'm sorry,
giant.
Are you talking about like what's the word I'm looking for? You said protruding.
Yeah, I can't think of the proper word.
What's the word, chat? What's the word I'm looking for?
Really want that word right now?
Yes, I do.
Well, anyway, just like giant anus face monster.
Prolapse. Thank you, Prolapse.
Wonderful. Thank you, PoCop, for giving us this word that I really didn't need to think about.
Prolapsed ass faces. That's the... Yeah. Prolapsed ass faces are the enemy fodder in this game?
The main enemy fodder of the game. There are different classes of enemies. There's like huge walking like 8-foot ones that are more focused on melee attacks. There are what are called scouts that when they haven't detected you in stealth, they've got like huge tentacles coming out of their faces and touching the walls and kind of like looking around for you. But when they detect you, they all retract into their face, and it kind of looks like a rose flower thing, except it starts shooting like eggs at you. It's really weird, this monster design there.
Interesting. I guess the only question I think I really have about this game, so we already kind of covered, it's a little Left 4 Dead-y, right? As far as like main, like general gameplay loop, right? You're going in there with three other players and trying to clear out these enemies. make it through the level.
You're not necessarily going to clear them out. You're just trying to get through the level. So what you'll do is you'll come across a door. It'll be what's called an apex door. It's got a lock on it. You got to find a key card. You got to examine the door, find the designation for the door. So like B17. Uh-huh. Then you got to go find a terminal. You type in locate B17 key card, like typing out on a keyboard, and it'll give you the location of a crate that has that key.
Mm-hmm.
You go to that room, you find the key, you do a little hacking mini game to get into it, or you just like find the secret code to unlock the crate. You get the key card, you go back into the room, and then you activate the key card. And then it goes into a bioscan sequence. Basically, you stay in a very small area while you're scanned for, like, infection or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in those moments where the basically AI director, which I think there's an AI director, it gets angry at you and sends the horde after you.
Okay.
Since it's not quite as snappy as Payday, and we didn't really know exactly what we were doing as, you know, not the devs. We were getting swarmed and overwhelmed very, very easily. But that being said, the game did have a few interesting tools to actually make the swarm moments actually a lot better for you. For example, I chose to bring a tracking tool. And it basically pops up this 3D display. And based on the colors that are shown on the display and the size of the icon that appears, I can tell whether enemies are asleep or dormant, whether they're active and walking around. And then I can hold a button and have that designate all the enemies on the screen as like a HUD ID for everybody else in the environment.
For all the other players.
Yeah, so they can see it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't kind of get to my actual question, which was, moment to moment when you're playing this game, is the tone they're going for like genuine horror? Like, is this a horror, like Left 4 Dead-esque game? Does that make sense?
It's trying to be.
Because it looks very dark. I don't know quite yet. It looks like a very dark game.
Like, it is an absolutely very dark game. I mean, okay. you're going into these deep underground tunnels where these prolapsed anus monsters are coming after you in swarms.
Like, are they doing anything cool, like with audio design to creep you out while you're down there? Are they like, I don't know. I feel like this, like there's a lot of potential with a concept like this if they really ramp up like the audio design.
There was some decent audio design in there. The monsters are. They've got like screechy kind of calls to them. They're pretty creepy. The weapon design in and of themselves are actually pretty cool because like the reticles and everything is set up like a full 3D sci-fi thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it pulls in very slowly when you're aiming down the sight, but at the same time, it kind of has this 3D marker effect to enemies when you're aiming. It's kind of hard to describe. But it makes the shooting feel better than it actually is.
Interesting. I'll have to watch some footage of this game. I haven't seen it since they first announced it. But it sounds interesting. If not a bit rough. Uh-oh.
What?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you for a second. You cut. I saw you were talking, but I couldn't hear you. So, never mind. I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah, I was saying it's quite rough at the moment. I think this game needs another year before you can really, really show off what it's capable of. But that being said, the game, according to its Steam page, it's due out in 2018.
I think this is going to be another rough release. We'll see what happens.
The trailer looks really fucking good. It's just the gameplay, the actual demo that we played did not reflect it.
Gotcha. Not necessarily too surprising. Okay. Now
you can talk about Metro.
Now we can talk about Metro. Crispy, wake up. Let's talk about Metro. Uh-oh. Is Crispy
still here?
What about it, man?
We played it.
We did.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was a game.
Okay, so
it had guns.
It. All right, so Metro Exodus. We had an appointment to play about 45 minutes or so of Metro Exodus. It's the same demo that Chris Davis played the other day. We actually had to miss that appointment, unfortunately, because we had a opportunity come up to see Sekiro. Didn't want to miss that, so we ended up rescheduling and going to play it. It was literally the last thing we played. In fact, E3 ended with our demo. The demo ended. He was like, "Well, I can't really tell you enjoy the rest of your E3 because it's over. Get out." But yeah, we played it for a good 45 minutes or so. I will say this. So Chris Davis obviously was very positive about it. And two, I want to preface this by saying I'm actually still pretty positive about this game because I'm a big fan of Metro. The last two games I've enjoyed quite a bit. But I will say this, they've all had their fair share of jank. I don't even know if jank is the word. It's just kind of a weird game. It feels kind of unlike anything else out there, which in some cases
it's really meant to feel slow and heavy.
Yes. And in some cases there an argument can definitely be made that for that being a good thing. I can see how it might turn some people off. I don't know. But they basically right up front said we opted to do something a little bit different instead of polishing like a super linear area to death and letting us play that. They opted to just kind of let us out into this open space to play around and do what we want, at the expense of the lack of polish and some incomplete animations and potential bugs and all. They kind of warned us right up front about all these things. That didn't necessarily soften the blow when we hit them, though. And there's some things that I can't even tell if they were bugs or if they were just that's how the game works. I know Crispy and I both had some scenarios where we... First of all, I think both of us died quite a few times in this demo. And not necessarily from being attacked by things. Am I right, Chris?
No, I didn't die. Did you die?
Fuck you, you died, right?
I jumped off the railroad tracks onto the ground, which doesn't sound like a very long fall, but it was, and it killed me. And then another time I climbed up a tower and I jumped off like the third level of the tower, so I was like 25, 30 feet in the air, and I just hit the ground and nothing happened. So there was some of that delicious, you know, pre-beta jank going on.
Yeah.
A lot of the combat was the guns feel really good.
They do. And the signature the combat, audio. Sorry, I was just going to say the signature audio design of Metro is definitely still intact here. Like everything has this like really, like Chris Davis said, kind of like heavy feel to it. Everything feels like it has weight and like these really satisfying like clicking noises and stuff. Like when you're like messing around with the guns and like cocking them and stuff. All of that stuff at least looks and sounds and feels really nice. Still love that stuff.
Yeah. I didn't get involved into a whole lot of combat. I kind of accidentally loaded a save where it just kind of dropped me right in the middle of that church scenario that Chris Davis described the other night.
Yeah.
And then I just ran up to the top of the tower, talked to an NPC, ran down the tower, shot a few dudes, and then all the other dudes gave up. Yeah. So I just went around and punched them out.
And there's a couple things so here's the thing I was a little worried about going into this game, because they kept talking about how it's more open, but it's not open world. And I was like, that could mean any number of things. And I know a lot of people talk about one of the first games that kind of did this was kind of like was Dragon Age Inquisition, right? They were like, they're big open areas, but they're like, this is not exactly the same as that. It's the one that I always kind of go back to.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about those were it was different zones of a larger world that you could kind of travel to.
Yeah. And this definitely isn't that. Like,
I would compare this to more like, I don't know, probably like Witcher 2.
Yeah. You
know, where it's like these big linear, it's this linear progression of chapters, but like each chapter has its own map
that yeah.
you spend some time on and then move away from and probably don't come back to.
Yeah. And the way it had been described, I think, by the developers and also by Chris Davis when we were talking about it the other night, I was really honestly picturing something much bigger as far as the environments go, because they dropped us into one of the big open maps.
Yeah,
and they said you can kind of go anywhere and do whatever. It's just know there's going to be jank. But it was not. It didn't feel very big. It didn't like you.
Well, I just didn't have enough time to like get anywhere interesting before the demo was over.
Yeah, it was
between dying and like the load times being really rough because it's like a non-optimized version of the game. Like by the time I finally like rescued an NPC from some dudes, and then he was like, "Hey, there's technology stashed on this little island over there. You should row over there and get it." And then by the time I got over there, they were like, "Okay, that's our time for today." So, like, these areas are pretty big. They're not super dense, though.
Yeah,
is kind of what I'm feeling right now. But who knows? I feel that this section of game we played was probably, if not like the first, one of the first areas you go to in the game.
Probably,
I think it is.
Yeah. So hopefully that's something that kind of progresses.
Yeah, I think it has to be, because
you're heading from Moscow to. I don't remember where they said you're actually going, but I thought it was
the Ural Mountains.
Oh, okay.
I just remember the demo opened with. So you're playing, is it, what's his name again? Atrium?
Artyom.
Artyom. You're playing Artyom again, and the game opens with him and his wife, right? Is that his wife?
Yep.
On the train, and they're both talking about how they're, like, leaving Moscow, and they're like, oh my god, we're gonna go find a new world kind of thing, which very much felt to me like the beginning of the game.
They're gonna go find the government.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't be totally surprised if this was... So, let me just say that I played this demo, and I didn't have the same issue with Crispy where he accidentally loaded into a story sequence that he couldn't get out of. I spent the entire time just kind of running around aimlessly trying to see how big the map was, see what kind of things they populated the map with, and I covered pretty much the entire map, like from one side to the other, while avoiding the side that had the story stuff. Because I intentionally wanted to avoid the linear story progression stuff, in favor of the more open stuff.
That's what fucked me, because when they were like, "Oh, off to the left is that church," and the game's like, "We should go check that out," I turned right and ran.
Yeah,
and like just fell off a hill.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure what Crispy ended up doing, because they did at some point when they were preparing us for the demo, they're like, "There'll be jank, blah blah blah. If you die," they said, "choose the load last checkpoint option in the save menu." But there was also one that just said
quick load,
and I think you hit quick load and it just dropped you into the story mission.
I mean, I'm glad that Chris Davis told me what was going on in that mission the other night, because I would have had no fucking clue what that was. It was weird.
Strangely enough, I kind of wandered across the entirety of the map in one particular direction, which is where I kind of started talking about, like, I'm a little worried because it didn't feel as big as I was expecting, but I kept accidentally like stumbling across enemies like these wolf, like these weird like deformed wolf creatures, and this stupid thing in the water. Water that wouldn't come out, that wouldn't stop fucking attacking me. I even got picked up by a fucking flying thing and carried.
What? Yeah. I didn't see flying things.
You didn't see that?
You got picked up by a demon?
It looks like like one of those like gargoyle looking motherfuckers, like swoops down.
They're demons.
Yeah, the demon.
No, they're called gargoyles. Anna called them gargoyles.
The fucking demon swooped down, picked me up, like, lifted me into the sky, and like dropped me, and I lost almost all my health. And then I ran out of bullets, and it was just like a mad dash to try and I kept running into small groups of humans, but I was out of bullets because I tried to kill the stupid demon, and I fucking missed every time because he's flying around like a madman.
Did you get the pneumatic rifle?
Because that thing was pretty cool.
No, I don't think I did.
There's a rifle. The pneumatic rifles are my favorites in the game.
Yeah, that was something you go back to the train. Like, if you did the church thing, you rescue these NPCs, you take them back to the train, and then you get a pneumatic rifle where you, like, can pump it up. And it has, like, a little meter on it, so, like, the higher you pump the tank on it, the more damage the rounds do.
And then you can watch the meter, right?
Yeah, you can, like, over-pump it into a red zone, and it won't stay there, but any shots you fire while it's in there, like, do more damage.
Yeah. No, that was in Metro Last Light, too, I believe. Maybe even the first one.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I didn't
play that. It's been in all three games, actually.
Yeah,
so it was pretty cool.
That is a cool weapon. I do miss that. But yeah, I just felt like my demo was largely kind of a clusterfuck. I just kept backing up and, like, stumbling across groups of humans and not having enough ammo to deal with them. And
it was rough. I mean, it needs some polish for sure, and you know they said that as well.
But it's also it needs a level of polish that I think they won't have any problem applying in the amount of time they have between now and release.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see if that's true. I hope so. I think that this has been a really interesting series. I've never really been able to get into it just because I wasn't as into the, like, kind of more linear underground, like, claustrophobic settings of it.
Yeah.
But now that they're trying to do something different with that and, like, take it up into these, like, open surface world areas, I don't know if they can get the core, you know, user experience down and polished and like cleaned up a bit, could be a really fun game.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Last thing I wanted to say was I also spent a lot of time trying to see if I could find things that would potentially lead to, like, underground areas. Because I had a feeling, like, it looks small, but there might be a bunch of, like, underground stuff that you can do. But I didn't have any luck finding that.
There was a swamp. Wait, there was?
Yeah, so there's a side quest that'll pop up after you complete a certain objective, in which Anna has disappeared. Nobody knows where she went. You get our last known location, and you go there, and you basically fall into a pit that leads to underground tunnels, and you rescue her, and you try to get her out of there.
Yeah, so that's...
How much time did you have in this demo, man?
Oh, no, I didn't get to do that. I found the location where that happens, but I only learned about that after the fact. If you go on their YouTube channel, they've got, like, a 17-minute demo walkthrough thing. It's like a bunch of clips of various different things, and that's one of them.
So yeah, all in all, I think the game shows a lot of promise. I'm still really, really excited to play it. They do need to do a lot of optimization and polish at this point. Like, when I say optimization, like, every time we died, it took, like, a solid 2 minutes to load back in.
So bad.
And I died probably 4 or 5 times, usually from fall damage.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing on the Xbox dev kits, and these were supposed to be the Scorpio specs, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect it to take a while to load.
It's not called the Scorpio, Chris Davis.
Whatever, it's such a better name than Xbox One X.
Yeah.
Just say Scorpio, it's so much better.
That's true. All right, anyways, that's it for our Day 3 stuff. That's kind of all we saw and played. Like I said, I just kind of want to wrap this up by talking about the state of E3 and get y'all's opinion on the show in general and the showing, and maybe we can quickly just say kind of what our highlight was of the show, but just kind of on a general level, I think this is the second year the show has been open to the public, and and when I say open to the public, typically I think there's only like 15,000 members of the public they essentially sell 15,000 tickets to public member people who want to get in, but the attendance was up again this year. I think it was up to 69,000 total, which is what their press release said that the day that E3 ended, which is kind of crazy. It's 69,000 people over the course of 3 days trying to get into this place and play games and see all this cool stuff, and historically speaking, E3 has been, you know, an industry-only event, and I think it's great that they want people, the general public, to get in and see it and experience and get excited and get hyped. That's really cool, but it's kind of at the expense of both sides, Because like the first 2 days, like, you know, on day two with, I spent, this was during the time that it was open only to the industry. So industry and media. I spent 3.5 hours trying to play the Resident Evil 2 demo. And then during that time, I was sitting in line when they opened the doors to the public, and I watched the room like double in density, like just watching those, like, the people pack in at that time. I was like, holy shit. And watching people panic and try to like get in a line and then see that it's capped, and then everyone, and then that thing that always happens where like they cap a line and they say check back in 30 minutes, and then people are like, well, I'm gonna take 2 steps over to the right and just kind of watch this person. Like there's all that shit happening all the time.
Yep. I mean that's how I was able to get into the line for Valkyria Chronicles 4.
Yeah. And it sucks too, because like if they're gonna let people in, they really need to have a way to kind of accommodate that many people and like make it so that those people can. There are people that were going to E3 who I'm sure have been looking forward to the opportunity to go to E3 for years, who showed up and maybe were lucky to play one game a day or 2 games a day, depending on what they're going for.
I mean, yeah,
like it was crowded enough during press hours, and you know, it was open like 3 hours before they let the general public in. So, I mean, there are these people who have never been to E3 before, who paid $250 for the pass, who were like got there probably at like 9 or 10 o'clock anyway, mm-hmm. to line up. And then at noon when they let everybody in, they're running in to hit the tail end of like 3-4 hour long lines.
Yeah, yeah. So like that,
like it is ridiculous.
The crazy thing is like, so last year they did the thing that they let the public in, but they didn't really change the way they handled the media hour. If I remember correctly, last year the media hour was literally just like on one day it was like maybe 1 or 2 hours, I guess, maybe, if that. Or maybe did they even do a media hour last year, or was it just like everybody's in at the same time?
No, everybody's in at the same time.
Okay, yeah, so everybody was in at the same time last year, so all 3 days were kind of fucked. And like they you know, when you got to the convention center, like the line was madness. It was like, imagine a convention center with like 20,000 people like waiting in a giant line, and then when the doors open, like a fucking mad rush, like a stampede of people. Like, you know when you see like Walmart on Black Friday, just people rushing the doors? It was like that.
Yeah.
They had safety concerns. So they had to reevaluate it. And I think they made a step in the right direction this year. In a way that I could see where their heart was, as far as like what they were trying to do, where they were trying to benefit the media by giving them not one, but like 3 extra hours on 2 days to go in there without having to worry about the extra crowds. And that in and of itself was a great idea. And then the third day, no media hour at all. It's open to the public all day long. But like what sucks is that for the people who do get in at noon or whatever after the media hour ends, they're just coming in and they're getting, there's all the lines are full of media and industry people, and they're lucky to get in. Like those lines get capped super quick at that point, and then people are just stuck wandering around trying to find something to play. Like obviously things like Resident Evil 2 was almost impossible to play if you didn't get there at the moment the show floor opened.
And the floor closed at 7, and if you weren't standing in a line already at 5,
you're fucked.
It was like, might as well go home.
Yeah. And some of the, and 5 is even being generous. I think like in the case of something like Resident Evil 2, if you weren't in line by like 2 in the afternoon, there's probably not much of a chance of you getting in to play that game before the show floor closed.
Yeah.
Kingdom, like there are some games like that I, you know, some games I probably, like media, especially like smaller media like us, like people who aren't like IGN or GameSpot or whatever, like
right.
We only get certain appointments for certain things, and it's harder for us to get into some of the bigger things. Like I think we were super lucky to get anybody in to see Cyberpunk. I think we were super lucky to get in to see Sekiro. I thought,
yeah, you would say
that. Yeah, I know I would say that. I tried so goddamn hard, guys. Yep.
No, you didn't. Don't lie to me, Nick.
Oh my god. The point is, like,
I didn't get to see Sekiro.
I know, because you were. Cool, I knew you weren't going to give up your Metro appointment.
Well, that was true. That was going to happen.
That was during the Metro appointment. So, you know, there were certain things I prioritize over other things. We always do that, especially when we know what appointments we do have, what appointments we don't have. And, like, things like, I was like, oh, shit. Third day, I realized, oh, my God, what was I thinking? This is my first opportunity to play Kingdom Hearts 3. Didn't happen. Because the line was stupid fucking long. All day long.
We didn't see any indies, really. We didn't see...
There were some indies, but we didn't really...
I had an Indiegate appointment that I went to, but those appointments are weird because they have, like, the appointments, quote-unquote, are, like, 30 minutes long, and there's, like, 20 games, but they really just walk you around and show you and talk to you about each game, and then you get to pick, and you just get to walk around Indiegate and play stuff. But you have to wait in lines. Yeah. It's kind of a weird way to do it. But, you know, it's kind of unfortunate. They were trying to benefit the media, but it kind of screws over the public. But and then at the same time, having the public in there at all kind of screws over the media, especially the smaller media groups like us, who don't get to get place and talk about some cool stuff that was there.
Yeah.
Like Bethesda, like none of us really got in to see Fallout 76. I would have loved to
That line was a particular horror show.
Also, on top of the fact, the moment they let the public in, you started to see a lot of emphasis on swag, like PAX.
Yep,
swag? Which is great. I love swag. Swag is fantastic. It's just like
swag this year.
Yeah, there was a lot of swag this year.
Tacky and tasteless.
I left E3 with like five new shirts. By the way, Chris Davis, I have like six GTFO hats in my backpack that you need to take. You son of a bitch. I opened my bag. I was like, why do I have all these hats? It's ridiculous.
Well, the developers wanted to give us something.
Yeah, five or six hats?
I think that's very nice of them.
Oh, my goodness. No, it was very nice of them. It's just they all ended up in my bag. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a bummer. Because I think it'll be interesting to see what they do next year because they're going to learn from the mistakes of this year. I
don't think they will.
One hopes.
I mean, there's got to be
something.
I
think the way to do it is to mandate for, based on your booth size, how many dedicated PlayStations you can have for press versus public.
That's not bad.
You literally have to flag people based on what their badge says and get them in based on how many stations you've got available at that moment.
That's what I'm saying. I think there could be ways to accommodate this.
That'd be weird, though, because you said there was 15,000 public passes sold.
Yeah.
But there were 69,000 people there, which means there was 54,000 press and industry
and
versus 15,000.
And that's
so that, like splitting it down the middle like that is.
Yeah, I mean, it would be weird.
Like
it, and but to be honest, that was what you know the 50,000 or so people, like media and industry in attendance, was kind of what it used to be. So like this 15,000 is just kind of on top of that. So I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of learning and adapting over the next few years. And I think what Chris Davis said is probably definitely a possibility.
I think there's also the issue that there wasn't a whole lot to draw people's attention. Like everyone was kind of congregating around the same stuff because I mean, look at Sony's booth.
Mm-hmm. That was weirdest thing.
A bunch of Spider-Man kiosks and then nothing. It was a huge open area of nothing in front of their stage. And Nintendo, Smash Brothers, was basically the same thing. It was just like these huge open areas with like one side of the booth is kiosk and the rest of it is just like open area holding people. Like,
you know what? The thing is, so one thing I think it's kind of, it's hard to do because everybody, like, all the different companies do things a little bit differently, right? And they all have their own ideology about, like, how they want to show off their games. But I feel like, as if E3 had any say in it and they wanted to like maximize people's time and potential to like see things, there could be so many different things they could do to potentially, like, there could be a requirement on the number of, one, the number of kiosks available to public versus media. There could be a requirement as far as the number of people that can be seated in theater demonstrations. And I think maybe there should even be like a time limit requirement on every demo, so like no one can spend more than like 10 minutes playing a game. I feel like that might suck in some cases, but people would end up seeing a lot more if, like, there are some demos at E3 that take like 20-30 minutes to complete, and when you're in a line of like 200 people to play that, you're just not going to play it. So like my favorite demos at E3 are the ones, or at PAX or anywhere, are the ones where I play and I just start playing, and when you hit start behind the scenes there's a timer, and when that thing stops, like my Jurassic World Evolution demo, like I played it for about 10 minutes, and as soon as I hit that time limit, the screen faded away and it said thanks for playing, next up. And I feel like if they were implementing requirements on those kinds of things across the board, there would be more people seeing more and being less frustrated. The thing you said about Sony is really weird too, because like, I don't know, Sony historically, their booths year after year have been packed with stuff.
Yeah.
Like 50.
Like their big show, the big games that they're showing, and then also like a bunch of like indies that they're promoting that year. Like, remember the first, 2 years ago, my first E3, half of their booth space was indie games.
Yeah. And
there was things like Manifold Garden there.
Yeah. And it was like, great.
Yeah, and this year it was nothing.
It was 50 kiosks for Spider-Man, a giant empty floor for watching a big screen, instead of what they did last year.
They had two small areas for Call of Duty and Destiny.
Yeah, and like
one whole wall for like VR games.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And what they've done in the past, and Sony is relying so much on that stupid app, which, man, fuck that thing. I think they're trying to do the Disney World Fast Pass thing, but like it screws people over hardcore. Those should just be lines, honestly. And like the past few years, they've done that thing with they pick three games they're going to kind of highlight, and they do like these nice theater demonstrations for them. Those were kind of cool. I like those, but like maybe shorten those demo times and like increase the amount of people they can fit in each theater and use the space better. I don't know. But if they had those kind of requirements across the board for like all the demos, all the things being shown at E3, it could have been such a better show. But I think we're still probably a few years away from like seeing them take those kinds of steps. I don't know. We'll see what happens. They learned a lot from last year, so the jump to next year could be just as dramatic. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see.
Before we wrap up, maybe can each one of us just say what our highlight was of the show? No?
My highlight of the show was, part of me kind of wants to say playing Spider-Man, because that was amazing to finally get hands on with that, but that game comes out in like 3 months, so it doesn't, you know,
yeah.
It doesn't feel like that special. Actually, Sekiro, I think.
Yeah.
That was probably the one that was, I don't know, the most intriguing, and you know, we kind of had to go out of our way for it,
quite literally
a hotel room, but the gameplay itself, like that was the most of like, what the fuck is this game, to
that's what the fuck this is.
Yeah. You know, during the conference, and what it ended up being, despite my early kind of reservations of like, oh, I don't know, is it going to be good? To looking at it and seeing with my own two eyes, like, okay, that looks like a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Was a real reassurance.
Would you say Sekiro is your best in show, personally?
It is absolutely on my short list. It is absolutely top three. Maybe it is my best. Maybe.
Cool. Maybe. Chris Davis, what's your highlight?
Probably Resident Evil 2.
Damn you. That's my highlight.
well, suck my dick, that's what it is. Just the amount of quality that they've brought to the table is exactly what they promised over 3 years ago when they announced this fucking project.
Yeah.
It is scary. It is oppressive. It's dark. It's a fucking horror game. It's not this fucking runaround and action bullshit like
Resident Evil
eventually became.
But it's also benefiting from like all of the improvements to the controls and whatnot that have been introduced to the series over the past few years.
Yeah, mainly what was mainly from 7. Let's be honest here, because that's really where like
This game controls
shook things up and took like such basic things as like opening a fucking door, taking it back and making it just you're opening a door, but like in the most tense manner possible.
But I'm talking about controls. Out of loading screen. I'm talking about controls. Like the game looks like Resident Evil Remake. It's scary as hell, like Resident Evil 7, but it controls and feels a lot more like Resident Evil 5 and 6, because of the camera placement, because of the way you aim and shoot and everything and move.
I would say more 5 than 6, because 5 was very loosey-goosey. Six was very loosey-goosey.
6 was a little loosey-goosey, yeah. It's probably more 5 than 6, and as much as I hate 6 with a passion, I do think control-wise, it still had moments where it felt pretty good. But yeah, it's probably more 5. But yeah, Resident Evil 2 is definitely... But since you said Resident Evil 2 is your highlight, I will say Resident Evil 2 is my game of show, personal game of show. But since you already said that's your highlight, I'll go ahead and, of course, I'll say Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I bet it was, Nick.
It was pretty great. It was pretty great. I watched that trailer again yesterday, and oh, shit. Man.
God, that game sounds like everything
you want in a game.
I don't know. It sounds too good. I don't trust it anymore.
That's probably
I'm scared to find out what happens when the public actually sees what the actual game is. Sees the presentation that you saw.
We'll see what happens. I mean, are you talking about the people being freaked out because it's a first-person game?
I mean, not necessarily that demographic of dumb, but like just what you're describing of this gigantic cyberpunk game.
It's pretty big.
I
don't think people are ready for this shit, man. I think it's gonna be a game changer. I think The Witcher 3 was a game changer in its own right, but I think Cyberpunk is such. I think it could have been so easy and so tempting for them to like have reskinned The Witcher 3 in a different setting, which I think is what I was expecting of this game.
And people would have liked that too.
Yeah, people would have liked that too. I would have liked that, but like this is so much bigger than that, and I think that's great. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
And boobies.
And there are lots of boobies, yes. Saw a lot of nudity in that short 45-minute demo.
And dong, too, don't worry.
And then there appears to be some dong as well.
So the game's equal opportunity, that's nice.
Equal opportunity nudity, for sure. Anyways, I think that's going to about do it for our wrap-up show, guys. Chris Davis, thanks for being here. Hello, cat. Chris Davis is holding his cat in front of the camera. Thank you guys for being here. Thanks for coming to E3. Thank you for...
Of course, thanks for having us.
Putting your time and effort into the show and being
and
on the podcast.
And our knees into it.
Being on the podcast every night. It's been great. You can find, if you're watching us out there, if you haven't checked us out, you can find all of our E3 podcasts up on the site at 4playernetwork.com. We will, of course, be recording our usual podcast on Thursday nights. We do that at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time on 4pp.tv. So it'll be our first podcast since before E3. So it should be fun. We'll have Brad. We'll have Nolan. We haven't seen or talked to them in a little while. And as a reminder to anyone who's going to tune in tomorrow for my stream, no 4-player plus this week. This is kind of serving as that as 4-player plus for the week. But I'll get back on that with the following week. But yeah, thank you guys so much for hanging out. Thank you guys for joining us all week for E3. It's been fun. And yeah, have a good night.
Bye. We'll be right back.